Let's name the doctors. You've got William Hartnell, yes. Patrick Troughton, yes. John Pertwee, yes. Tom Baker, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy.
Peter Davidson.
Oh! Television's Peter Davidson.
Oh, yes, I was forgetting.
Weren't you?
And coming up in this episode, it's a Kinder surprise.
Oh, that's nice.
We're talking about Kinder and Snake Dance. Yes. And we're getting all wrapped up in mystic monsters.
Peter Davidson was in those.
All that and more in this exciting episode of...
Doctor Who?
The Complete Menagerie?
Almost.
All the young people do on the, when the young people are out there shooting hoops with their friends, they all go up at the end of the sentences.
It's because they watch soap operas.
Now, Tom Baker never speaks in that way. It's always very clear. But somebody who does have an inflection is Sir Roger Moore.
Sir Roger Moore.
Sometimes goes up and then often goes down.
So maybe the whole thing came from Sir Roger Moore.
He was asked more recently if he'd be willing to have a cameo role if they brought a new James Bond. It's probably not going to be Daniel Craig. And Sir Roger said,
well, of course I'd be interested as long as I didn't have to do any of my own stunts, such as getting out of my chair.
But I'd very much be willing to record all my own love scenes. Good old Roger.
And I'm going to ask you to take two good deep breaths and swallow it. It will not hurt you. No. And then say, I'd like a martini stirred, not shaken. Okay? Now let me
try. Let's see if I can say it.
Another one? Okay. Go ahead.
I'd like. Oh, my God. How long is this going to be?
It's gone.
It's fantastic.
It's gone.
What a wonderful turn on.
Now, can you say?
Wow, let's do that again, John. Bring the girls on!
We've decided that that's what all the young people are copying Roger Moore.
Young people.
Don't get me started hanging around the bike sheds and the bins,
drinking cider,
playing with their Tamagotchis.
Just through the formalities, again, as usual, we are a Doctor Who podcast. My name is Sam.
Yes, we haven't introduced ourselves. Yes. I'm Tom.
You're Tom. Greg. You're Greg.
Yeah, we're kind of assuming that we're all very familiar. I mean, we've probably mostly been to bed with most of our listeners by now. You know, I mean, we're all getting quite familiar, aren't we? We've had lots of tweets. People are following us on Twitter. People are tweeting at us. Yes. I've been listening to... comrades in arms, I'd rather say, than our rivals, but I've been listening to some other Doctor Who podcasts.
You.
Some
awful
people,
man.
I mean, when I have to say it, as Mr. Samuel Payne here, who's sitting
sleeping
to my left.
Sleeping around.
Hello. Who came up with the genesis, as it were, of this idea. He said, shall we record a Doctor Who podcast? And I'd never even heard the word podcast.
I've never even heard the word Doctor Who. Evidence from some of the opinions I have.
So we were roped in. I thought, well, Roger, we're not here. And then I realised that other people talk about Doctor Who on the internet. And
Other people.
And some of them very good,
cheers.
Actually. I now drive to work again, and I've been listening to the Crinoid podcast. You get it? No Dutch pod. The Crinoid podcast, the Time Vault podcast. Yeah.
There's the Prodger Who podcast, which is Doctor Who meets prog music, and that's good fun.
Listen to that one yet?
I'm thinking too much of a good thing. I think actually being on one is enough for me. I haven't attempted to listen to all these things. You know, it does seem as if everybody in the world has a Doctor Who podcast.
No, I think it's just we're becoming medium-sized fishes in a relatively small pond, and it's very welcoming and inclusive, I have to say. And nobody feels that we're treading on their toes, and I'm enjoying their shit, they're enjoying our shit. Everybody's just wading around in shit, really.
I protest!
What now?
Yes, now!
Put on that Twitter thing, because a lot of this stuff is picked up on this new social media platform called Twitter. Now, I'm on Twitter as well, but I find it very stressful. I took over the Doctor Who, the Complete Menagerie Twitter account briefly. The moment I put something on, I got some woman moaning at me, and I just thought, I can't be doing with this. So if anyone's out there listening to this podcast and wants to tweet in, it will be Greg and Sam that get mad at you, because I just can't. It's too much.
See if you can tell who's who. Who's who?
Who's whom? I can tell you it's not me.
We had a crisis meeting with Tom, and he made one tweet, and then the whole internet went to meltdown.
Went viral, and it was awful.
Tom broke the internet.
And I had to delete one of Greg's tweets, which I don't have the gall to repeat. So just imagine, there was a picture of somebody who had been incriminated for several offences, which was involving a doctor and somebody else.
Where's the sit now?
I saw it when I was working for my school that I work in, and I thought, this has to go now. And I followed up with a friendly text message. It was like, what the fuck are you doing?
This is my livelihood.
As Michael Sheard strode towards your office.
Ooh, boy!
What is this, Tadio? Wipe that beard off your face. You have no permission for that.
It's very funny though. We deliberately tweet out nonsense. I mean,
misinformation,
yeah. But do it with sort of a glint in our eye, and we're clearly taking the piss. But literal-minded Doctor Who fans, apparently a few of them exist. Don't tend to pick up on this. I tweeted a picture of Lala Ward with Peter Purvis, who are sitting in this warehouse-type building, clearly signing autographs at some sort of autograph mania conference or something like that. And I tweeted a picture saying, this is Lala Ward with her husband, Richard, a brief history of time, Dawkins, relaxing at home. And the number of people who wrote back saying, I think you'll find that's Peter Purvis. I mean, they didn't even notice that Richard Dawkins didn't write A Brief History of Time, and that they weren't relaxing at home. You know, it's extraordinary. You had one with Richard Herndon.
Well, we've been pushing a few out there. I was quite pleased with putting a picture of Barry Foster on the internet and saying John Pertwee was cast as Doctor Who in 1969 to 1973 before leaving to gain great success as Catweasel. And that was followed up by saying, that's not John Pertwee.
Yes.
Well, we know that. That's Barry Foster. Congratulations, well done. Neither of which have played Catweasel.
And well, a lot of it's lovely.
Cyber people.
A lot of people really get our humour and have been pepping us up. You know, it's been really nice to see.
Is this the point where we can talk about this?
The Tony Bentley Memorial Award.
Because we have... We raised the competition about Tony Beckley, who is an actor who is in. He played Harrison Chase in the story The Seeds of Doom with Tom Baker in 1976. Sadly, he died in 1980, April the 19th. I visited his grave, took a photograph of it, and picked up a few pieces of grass from his grave. This is whilst I was on my honeymoon in Los Angeles. You can find him in the West Hollywood Cemetery in Los Angeles. And so we have a framed picture here.
Are you going to go through the post bag?
Yes.
And rummage around in the sack?
Peoples of the universe, please attend carefully. The message that follows is vital to the future of you all.
It's usually Sam's sack that is spurted out onto the table, isn't it?
Greg's going to get his sack.
Sack, it's time for your sack, Greg. Which is unusual.
While you're doing that, I'll describe what we've got here.
Describe the sack.
It's a beautifully framed picture which Greg has photographed Tony Beckley's grave, and underneath is a blade of grass which he has just said he's pulled from the grave. Now, this has been, nearly a year ago.
Yeah.
The blade of grass is decomposed almost as quickly as Tony Beckley has. So it's slightly more weathered. The frame now, so it's not as fresh.
You've got your sack, you're about to spurt your sack and spurt your load onto the table.
Yes, because we did have some entries, and I said, I basically said, what's your favourite memory of Tony Beckley? But I think that makes it quite subjective.
Yeah.
So I don't want it to be subjective. I'd rather it be. It's so nice that I'm touched that actually people want this and people celebrate Tony Beckley and his life. And Tony Beckley fascinates me. He's one of my favourite actors. I've been watching him in an awful lot of stuff recently. And I was very moved to find his grave and actually sit by the grave and spend some time with him. And I'm not a spiritual person. I'm not going to claim I wept or anything like that. But it was very nice. So if other people like Tony Beckley, then that pleases me greatly. So rather than say, someone says this about him, I'll just pick a name out of the hat.
Right, let's get the hat ready.
Okay.
A little left flustering in the hat there. To Trilby, is it?
Yeah. So we've got some names here.
Okay, you've got it. You can unfold it.
Unfold the name.
That's it, unfold it, that's it.
Okay.
What does it say?
It says Jason Yates 000.
Ah, Jason Yates.
That's
now
a name.
That rings a bell.
Yeah.
Just Jason Yates is a big fan of ours, isn't he?
He is, actually, isn't he? Yes, he's got on board with the whole thing quite recently, hasn't
Hello to Jason Yates. Nice to see you.
Yeah, good shout out. But he's...
He's fed back. He said some lovely things about our podcast.
He's also very kind. When he first appeared on the scene, I just assumed it was made up. Somebody who liked Doctor Who.
You don't mean in terms of makeup, you mean...
No, I just said...
He wasn't tripped up like a doll. He's actually someone who exists.
Eddie Izzard.
You thought it was Samuel Payne creating his own Twitter account.
No, I did. I read about this sort of thing, that people create their own identities on Twitter to hook in lonely... sad women. And I thought, there's Samuel Payne. he's created a whole profile online in order to hook in some beauties, and them. But yeah. But no, he's a real man, a real fellow. So nice to hear from you, Jason.
He's a business professional, travels the world a lot. He said he was listening to our podcast on a transatlantic flight, I thought.
To Skegness.
We know we've made it now.
all the way to Skegness.
And he knows all the jokes, he gets
he
all
does,
the references,
yeah,
he's very rewarding.
I assumed it was you.
Actually, I don't think he's seen all of Doctor Who, has he? Because he tweeted at us more recently saying, shall I watch Black Orchid, and things like that. And we told him it was okay, but a bit shite, I think.
Well, he's very much in my shoes then, because I've not seen it all, and this podcast is an education to me.
I think he's a Doctor 1-4 man, and I can
appreciate that.
We were trying to steer him towards Sylvester McCoy. I don't think he entirely got on board with McCoy, but yeah, that's fine. But yes, so, Jason.
Congratulations, Jason.
Congratulations, the Tony Beckley Memorial Presentation. Framed Memorial Presentation is on its way to you. It's
first class.
So well done. And hopefully we'll have another competition at some point soon.
We will. There's going to be a competition at the end of the season.
Okay.
And we have promises from the end of our last season, which will be a signed Tom Baker photo, which is available up for grabs at the end of this season. So do stay tuned for that.
Quite rare now. Tom Baker hardly ever signs.
He's actually stopped signing.
Has he?
Which is a bit of a worry, actually. Mm. He's taken a break from it. I've got a line.
A loin. Guess the loin.
And this is the loin. You deserve a medal for self-sacrifice beyond the bounds of stupidity. Well, that's good that you know it. You deserve a medal for self-sacrifice beyond the bounds of stupidity, Greg.
It's Doctor saying it, isn't it?
Does it have the ring of Doctor Who saying
so,
it, Tom?
Yeah, I think it does, yeah.
I know that line, but I'm really struggling to place it now. Let's have it once more.
You deserve a medal for self-sacrifice beyond the bounds of stupidity.
Is it Terror of the Vervoids?
It's
not.
Like, sounds like Colin.
It's not. And it's not the Doctor saying it. And it's not. It's not being said to the Doctor.
In which case, I wouldn't remember.
I know that line. I knew it.
It's a famous line.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'll come back to it, I suppose. Yeah. Okay.
Very good. So, Kinder Surprise. Now, Tom, you raised this as an issue. You wanted more Devo.
Well, I did. It's not that I particularly wanted more Devo. I just noticed Peter Davidson
is
the Doctor.
Peter Davidson.
What do you mean? The name the Doctors. You've got William Hartnell,
yes.
Patrick Troughton,
yes.
John Pertwee,
yes.
Tom Baker, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy.
It's now Peter Davidson.
Oh! Television's Peter Davidson.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of...
Him off the Prestige advert.
That's it, yes.
Oh.
When I pay good money for saucepans, I expect them to last. Didn't you? Now, Prestige lifetime is guaranteed to last 10 years. And that means thousands of hours on your cooker, but a lot of time in the washing up. That's why only Prestige lifetime have thicker stainless steel bodies, solid copper bottoms, and real teak handles.
Put the oven on, honey. I'll be home in 20 minutes.
You can put the dinner on. I'll be home in
in 20 minutes.
Greg's not very used to me editing these episodes, right? And every time he says it, he goes, no, you can cut that, dear. Colour. No, no, it's staying where it is. All right.
It says here, time lash first.
Do your own self-editing.
For looks that last, it's lifetime. Only from Prestige.
We're going to go to the time-space visualizer. But it's a double.
Ooh, right.
It's not just any old time-space visualizer. We're looking at Kinder and Snake Dance.
Here we go!
Time-space visualizer.
Right, we're in the Time Space Visualizer, but there's two of us here.
There's T.
There's T.
There's T.
Two of us here.
No, what are we going to do? Quite like that. It's quite nice, isn't it?
It's talking about Kinder.
Kinder. I used to play a game with Andrew Shaw, who's on Twitter, who put a plastic bag on our heads and say, Kinder. Something we did at school. It was.
Wasn't it influenced by Kinder?
I don't think so. No, just being silly. But what happens in Kinder? Sam, you're going to kind of try to sum it up with some interruptions from us.
It's a difficult one to summarise. But here's. I'll give it my best shot.
Started episode one.
Doctor Who.
Peter Davidson's face looming at ya.
Doctor Who, Tegan, Matthew Waterhouse, and Nyssa land on the planet Living Da Vida Loca.
That homosexual Latino did a song about it,
didn't they? They're just there.
They're there.
They don't land.
And they've got a few deck chairs.
So I was wondering, I missed something here in the previous episode, because they're just kind of there.
They couldn't afford to do the warp materialisation.
So the TARDIS is there. It looks very patchy for some reason. It looks like it's been painted by the Blue Peter department and sponged down. It doesn't look very good. Outside the TARDIS, the Doctors, I think they're playing chess.
Yeah, and in the Devo era.
We don't need a blow-by-blow.
Anyway, this is the story. Nyssa,
this is not a story.
If you would just allow me to finish one sentence, you might learn something.
Starts doing some acting.
Right.
But then she feels poorly, so goes into the TARDIS.
Because he's done some acting, yes.
Meanwhile, Matthew Waterhouse and Tegan are exploring with the Doctor, and they come across some weird crystal shit hanging in the forest.
Chimes. Yeah. The chimes of Peladon.
The chimes of
At which point, Tegan becomes transfixed, has a bad dream.
Bad trip.
And goes on a Buddhist trip, if you like, into the metaphysical world of the void where the Mara resides. Meanwhile, Richard Todd and Simon Rowles...
Richard Todd! He's a proper...
The Dambusters!
Yeah.
And a stage fright with Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And Simon Rowles.
He's amazing, isn't he?
He was a massive name.
He's a very, very good actor. Yeah. He's in charge of this colonial expedition.
He's playing Winston Davis, isn't he?
He is.
It's aimed half odd mum.
And Simon Rowles is playing Hindle.
Is he related to Bruce Purchase? I don't know why did I say that?
Shut the fuck up. I'm trying to tell a story. Every time I tell a story, you jump in it. Wait till I'm done my story, then you tell your fucking story, and we can go from there. Stop interrupting me mid-fucking story. Okay. Damn. Back to what I was saying.
There is the bird off the liver birds.
Yes, it's Nerys Hughes.
No relation to you, Greg. Ex-scouse.
Why should she be related to Greg Jameson?
Because she's from
Because
Liverpool.
Your alter ego.
A Liverpool connection. Do you remember Bizarre? Was that a thing?
Yes, I do!
B-A-Z-W-R.
I used to get her mixed up with Murph Hughes, who used to play cricket.
What was that Bizarre programme that she was? It was like a magazine show.
Sort of thing, like Woman's Hour on the telly.
Yes, it was a long time ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Polly James, who was also in The Live of Birds with Nerys Hughes, later turned up also with Peter Davison in The Awakening. There's a connection.
Anyway.
There is a connection. So there is...
Trying to push this story forward.
Where are they? They're in some sort of dome, aren't they?
It's like a dome that's dropped from a spaceship for colonisation purposes.
It's a bit like the crystal meth.
This is the sort of thing... They're on crystal meth. Well, actually, Tegan looks as if she is. But they're colonisers. A bit like Star Trek, this, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. And they're making an investigation. Now, things have been going wrong because most of their crew have gone missing. There's only three of them left.
Okay. This is why you know it's a Doctor Who story.
Stop interrupting me, mid fucking story.
So we don't know what's happened. Turns out that the local inhabitants, known as
Oh, Jeffrey and Peter. Oh, I don't know.
The Kinder.
That's
the name of the story. The Kinder. Or the not we they call
the
people.
That's where the story comes from. That's where the story comes from.
Can I have
the Kinder?
That cheese. Is that going?
Oh, it's finished.
As Sam's chatting away, I'm just being a bit pet. Seems to have started about 10 minutes ago.
I feel like I've been on this for ages. So anyway, people are going
to miss it. Turns out to be.
No, this is going very quickly now because it's all the setup.
Yep.
The Kinder have been trying to absorb
the local tribespeople.
That's right. The local tribespeople have been trying to absorb those people into the Kinder through a.
Hold on, you're getting ahead of yourself. There's a mystery.
There is a mystery to be solved because, meanwhile, Tegan is making touch with this horrible, parasitic, metaphysical creature, which has landed on Davida Loca. It's not local, it's landed there.
But again,
it's landed on Diva Loca.
I think we should stick in episode one. The idea that they're in this funny land. That's why I'm eating cheese.
Wait till I'm done my story, then you tell your fucking story, and we can go from there.
I'll come back to you, Tom. Hold that thought.
No, but when they're in the funny land, that's just a
myth. Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
That's what we're talking about. So, she's in the dreamland, metaphysical dreamland.
Yes.
And she meets all sorts of strange characters, including herself.
Sex on legs. Another mouth on legs.
Anyway, she wakes up, and her mouth is all red, and she's possessed by the presence of the
mouth. Terrifying. Mm.
And she then inhabits the body of one of the Kinder, called Adrian Mills, who then went on to be in That's Life. As a presenter.
I guess
not him,
Michael,
is it?
Yes.
Is it him?
Yes, it is. It's the presenter, yeah.
It never is.
It is, it's him, yeah. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, basically...
Please do.
Hindle is pushed to...
Aris,
that's it. In Cockney, that means backside.
He got stabbed in the Aris.
He got stabbed in the Aris, that's it.
Like Polonius. Polonium,
that was it.
Doctor Who is captured by the Colonials.
The Polonium, you mean?
Along with the Doctor, the other Doctor, who's played by Nerys Hughes.
Plutonium.
If you would just let me finish one sentence.
There's a little Kinder box that he opens up and it changes the mind of Richard Todd's character, makes him go slightly crazy.
He changes his mind and thinks, I'm off to the BBC bar.
And he goes for a wander.
I'm voting Brexit.
If you would just let me finish one sentence.
Sorry, he basically goes for a wander. Equally, Hindle then holds capture, like a siege situation.
He loses it. Does he lose it because of the box?
Nothing to do with that.
Because he's just lost
the box is the cure. The box fixes him.
Right, thanks for calling that.
Well, we've all seen it.
No, I know, but I'm just sort of setting it up to kind of, and then sort of leave us. So he's going mad, but is it just because he's in this dome thing?
No. It's because people have been disappearing, and it's made him unhinged.
He's brilliant.
A bit like in Pinochet's Chile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember.
Hindle goes unhinged. He goes unhindled. Windsor Davis comes back and he's all cheerful.
He's come back and he's basically the number two at that point because he's insane. He's found peace.
And Hindle decides that he's going to blow everything up, basically, doesn't he? And that becomes a
bit... Only the base.
Only the base is about 50 miles outside of it. So he kill all the Kinder and he kill everything. So that becomes the quest, doesn't it, to try and stop him.
He's also found how to control the Kinder by using mirrors. It's a very important part of the story. So at this point... The Doctor's trapped and all hell's breaking loose with Tegan, who's controlling one of the Kinder.
Yeah.
And when the Doctor manages to escape, he comes into contact with a very old woman who gives him an awful vision of the future.
She's a bit like...
the end of everything.
That one from Brain of Morbius, but with a haircut.
Mary Morris.
She's very good. And that's in a nutshell, the setup of the story.
Yeah.
It's going to be the end of the world. But she says it's the end of everything. It's a cycle.
Yeah.
It's like almost like a full circle.
Everything comes in circles.
It reminded me a lot of Survival.
Okay.
In the sort of the milieu, you've got the people with the colonial hats on, and you've got the sort of the cyclical nature of stuff, and you've got the big themes coming out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also the sort of the rather absurdist bits in it. I mean, I think the stuff in the... I said this last episode, but one has to get one's head into watching Doctor Who. But I think this was... And when I put these things on, I've usually got my wife there, and so we kind of chortle along things and rubbish. I was terrified by that stuff with Tegan in the funny land. You know when she comes across the issue, that old couple.
It is very creepy.
That's really unnerving and really quite odd.
The guy who, I don't know who the actor is, but the guy who, with the silver face in that...
the old guy or the young guy?
The younger guy.
He's very good performance.
He was in
very
London's Bernie, I think.
Was he really? I don't recognise him.
No, but he's really good, isn't he?
He's got quite a strong, is it Birmingham accent? It's quite a strong accent.
Well, it's nice to hear a regional accent in Doctor Who at that time.
It's different, isn't it?
Well, those bits are really good, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
The old crone from EastEnders is in it.
The old Wendy lady. Richards.
Wendy Richards' mum, actually. It's very close, yeah. Yeah, she was quite a famous face. The old lady in The Void.
Oh, in The Void!
In the void.
So there's a name for these characters.
I like A Funny Land. You know when people go to a funny land, like the mind rolling?
I'm guessing that lad you're talking about is called the Trickster.
That's it?
Called Lee Corns.
Lee Corns, yeah, very good actor. Actually, he turned up in Red Dwarf and various other things.
It's terrible you get a problem with Lee Corns, isn't it? it's all in there, isn't it, in Kinder?
It is. I have to say, I mean, the last week when we gathered last Saturday, I was sort of slagging off the Peter Davison era a bit. I can't remember what I was saying now. It was a long time ago. It was 7 days ago. But I was saying it was a bit bland, a bit dry, and no real follow-on from Tom Baker. But actually, Kinder is the perfect Peter Davison story.
Very good.
Obviously, it's not perfect, but it suits the Fifth Doctor. That's what I mean by it. It suits the Fifth Doctor in the way that Tom Baker couldn't have been in Kinder.
No.
I don't think any other Doctor Who could have been in Kinder.
Yeah.
Maybe Sylvester McCoy.
I think it was written for Tom originally.
Was it? Really?
I
cannot see that working.
I think Christopher Hamilton Bindweed actually commissioned it. And it was floating around the office.
I think Tom's personality is too big.
Yeah.
And I think it sort of suits a smaller personality like Peter Davison and a very good dramatic actor like Peter Davison and a more naturalistic actor like Peter Davison. Whose performance rises in Kinder. I mean, Peter always gives his all. He's very professional. But I think he liked the Kinder script because his performance is very good. And because he's quite quiet.
Mm.
He's quite a sort of sedate... He internalises a lot, doesn't he? Whereas Tom Baker doesn't.
Tom's last season, he was quite quiet, though, and sedate, wasn't he?
Yeah. He didn't internalise a lot the way Peter Davison's Doctor does. But in Kinder, you genuinely feel with the Fifth Doctor, there's a lot bubbling under the surface. Mm. Yeah, I think it really suited him.
It's interesting you say that because there's a scene where they're trapped in a cage and he snaps when the box opens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very focused little scene.
Box of delight.
And that's it. And Peter Davison sat on the floor.
Yeah.
Cross-legged in like a Buddhist thing, which actually comes later, doesn't it, in Snake Dance as well. I don't think you really see Tom Baker ever sitting down because he always wants to be the tallest moving presence.
Tom Baker isn't a Buddhist. He's too much ego.
But Peter Davison
is a Catholic.
Well, exactly.
Peter Davison is more still. There's more stillness to his
and
doctor.
And he wore red socks,
which we spotted.
Buddhism. Mm. That's Buddhism all round.
It's the everything. All the evidence is lining up.
He's bald now. I'm putting on weight. Soon he'll be a laughing fat Buddha.
He's a bald lefty.
So this was Peter Grimwade's second.
He directs.
Third, possibly.
Mm.
He's the director.
Mm.
I think it looks fantastic. I really like the direction.
He went on to do Earthshock. It was also very...
Yeah, yeah.
Very well directed.
Same season.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think it's really well directed. There's a lot of use of, well, I would put down here, Quantel. Do you remember Quantel?
I've just got to say to the listeners...
In the void
I'm
stuff.
Not a technical
person. Samuel Bain's written something down.
Yes.
To remind him.
I wrote down lots of garbage.
I was thinking about writing things down, but never quite get round to it. So.
Tell us about Quantel.
What's Quantel?
Quantel was one of the early digital editing systems where they could composite images in the screen, like multiply images.
So, why did we ever ask?
You know,
our eyes are glazing over.
If you would just allow me to finish one sentence, you might learn something.
Tell us more about Quantel.
Quantel allowed you to do the scene, you know, when it zooms into her eye. It's quite a nice little scene.
Yes.
It zooms in. And then when she's duplicated several times. That was Quantel. They couldn't have done that.
No, they couldn't. Quantel Leap, I remember that.
That was very good, yes. He said, oh shit, at the end of every episode.
It was all written by Samuel Beckett, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh shit, he'll say. Quantel can come and go. But it's really quite a big story for this, isn't it, in terms of the themes and what's going on in it?
Yeah. It reminded me of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness, yes, Heart of Darkness. I've seen it. Whoops Apocalypse, and
that's what it reminded me of.
It has a quality of literature.
Yeah.
It does, and I've, so there's the stuff with the kingdom, which we'll get to, all the religious stuff. But if you look at just the relationship between Windsor Davis and Hinge and Brackett, you know, those two, there's something amazing about that. As you say, he goes mad. And
let's start touching on the performances, because I mean, you're probably both quite surprised that I've not raised this already. But isn't it wonderful in episode one where Nyssa feels unwell and goes back into the TARDIS and you think, yes, we've got 3.5 episodes with no Sarah Sutton. Celebrate good times, come on.
Why did that happen? Can you explain why in real life that happened?
I believe the story, because it was written for Tom Baker, was only written for two companions.
I mean, she is one of the worst companions ever written, so it was a great... But I kept thinking, when is she?
They didn't know what to do with her in the story.
They had no place for her. They only had the other
female lead doctor, didn't they? And just one character too many, because it is quite a small cast.
Yeah, it's a change.
And having her gravitas on stage along with everybody else would have just been overbearing. So
it was a relief to get rid of her. She's so terrible.
She stood inside the TARDIS and...
I mean, Adric's awful as well, but...
Well, Adric is terrible, but Adric and Nyssa on screen at the same time.
I think Matthew Waterhouse is better than Sarah Sutton.
Well, I would agree, but I mean, it's a bit like saying Himmler is better than Hitler, isn't it? You know, I mean, neither is particularly good.
Good card player.
She can't even walk properly. You know, she can't walk. She's terrible movement.
Well, we watched. This is a segue, but we watched Mordrin Undead, didn't we? We were staggered by the movement of Sarah Sutton. How bad it is, just how non-naturalistic the way she crosses the studio set. But anyway, let's get back to
Todd. But those two, you know, Todd. Just wonderful how you can do one thing and then come back entirely different, and you believe both of those characters. The first one being a sort of an authoritarian bastard, and the second one being sort of a simpleton, really. Mm. But you don't think any time that they're sort of pastiches. He's just doing it completely straight and really, really well. And I think good on him. I think
Simon Rowell's really threw himself.
The one who goes mad. It's just stunning work.
You've got Richard Todd, who actually, I mean, a lot of people probably now don't really remember him.
Matthew Waterhouse certainly didn't know who he was when he was working with him.
He lived a long life, and actually very, very, very sadly, Richard Todd's son predeceased him. You know, it was very, very sad. But a long life, illustrious career in the 1950s and 60s. He was one of Britain's biggest film stars. Yeah. He was up there with Dirk Bogarde, you know, people like that, the Rank organisation and so on. Michael Craig as well, who's in Terror of the Vervois, another big film actor, and a lot of people don't realise that. So to have Richard Todd in Doctor Who was a massive, massive coup. He's one of the biggest actors who was ever in the show. Simon Rouse hadn't done an awful lot to tell you about that. He ended up playing Meadows on The Bill for, I don't know, probably about 400 years.
Oh, God.
But a brilliant actor.
He's much better than that.
And a great idea to do that with those two and just, you know.
Yeah, the young and the old.
A bit of writing.
And they're both so good at it, aren't they? They're really, really good. We've not had really good guest performances like that for a long time, I think, in Doctor Who. And they are standouts, aren't they? I mean, I'm not wrong about this, am I?
Yes, no, I think so. And I think, you know, not only their acting is good, and I think that's that, but they're given good material. So that all that stuff with them reverting to childhood, it's done. It's not exactly an original idea. You know, it's done a lot. This is what happens when people get mad. They revert to childhood. It's not exactly original, but it's just done so well.
Hamlet, Ophelia.
Right, I brought a couple of books along to help us on our way. Again, I thought these might be helpful. In order to start talking, but unfortunately I didn't get round to looking at some quotes. But has it read The Golden Bough by James
Fraser? I have a copy
of it,
but no, I haven't actually read it.
But it basically just goes through all the major sort of well, the sort of tribes all over the world and what they believe in and how it's all connected. So every religion's pretty much the same, but it's just got little bits in it. There's quite a lot of stuff in there. And also this one, Freud, Totem and Taboo, both of which I don't think I've read all the way through. But it just occurred to me that, you know, that all that, there's so much of Freudian in this. I mean, that's used lazily, isn't it, the word Freudian?
Yes.
But this book's all about what, you know, society sees as taboo and where that came from and why it's taboo to
public masturbation,
all this sort of stuff, and then that's more about, I suppose, the killing of the god, and masturbation doesn't come into it quite so much. But you know, with this sort of reverting back to childhood, that's a little bit, you know, Freud would be interested in that, because you're sort of going back to a sort of dream world where you were a kid. You often dream about being a kid, don't you? So I just brought those along just for sort of decoration, really, because I didn't get time to flip through and read out some relevant
questions. But isn't it interesting, because, you know, if we were talking about Four to Doomsday, would you have brought along Freud and James the Golden Bough, Fraser with the Golden Bough?
No, I wouldn't. I think you would. You know, it's not the most, it's not a perfect serial, but it's certainly got ideas in it. I think that's the thing that really works. Mm. As you said this last episode about the ideas being good, and I kind of agree with you there, because they're searching for good, proper ideas. Where it falls down slightly is, as always, in the final episode, explain it, because you're sort of watching it going, okay, I know what this is all about, I get this, but I'm just waiting for Peter Davidson to say, wow, this is what it's all about, to help. And I do feel that it kind of, what you think it's confusing, I don't, but I think a kid would find it quite confusing, because it's not really explained, really, what's going on with the kinder and the cycle of life and all this sort of stuff. Mm. You have to read James Fraser for that, but I suppose that's what Doctor Who's good at, is pointing you in the direction of interesting stuff.
It's not a linear narrative, a straightforward narrative, is it? It's quite... it is linear, but it's not a straightforward narrative.
And they sort of use it, it's a bit of a runaround in episode 4, how to kill the Mara with those mirrors. It's a bit silly, but I think the idea of killing the god in order to sort of renew the tribe, that comes out in the Golden Bough. I'll have a flick through here and read out a few of the chapter titles, at least, just to give you a sort of killing the divine animal, the transference of evil, ancient scapegoats, all this stuff. Then you've got mother kin and mother goddesses. So this stuff isn't just conjured out of nothing.
Yeah.
This is the result of the writer actually doing a bit of research and probably having done this at university.
He was steeped in this, you know, Christopher Bailey.
I tried to find out more about it, so I was really interested in this.
Buddhist.
The Buddhist thing I'm not so sure about. I think that's more Barry Letts's avenue in the sort of planet of the spiders, but the killing of the tree spirit, the sacrifice of the king, the killing of the divine king. So they had to kill they had to elect a king in the tribe and kill him. That was what they did every now and again. They'd have to kill. It's like how we deposed our prime minister, I suppose, in order to refresh and move on. And that was something that was done, I suppose, to let the whole society sort of just keep going. So you had to sort of bring down the ruler somehow, the king, and so that sort of developed into a sort of. They wouldn't really kill anyone. It would be like a sort of a sacrifice, like a goat or something like that. Mm. But, you know, it was order to appease the gods. So this whole thing that you have to have someone who is sort of raised to being the master of the tribe, like what's-his-name is, the guy who was in That's Life.
Aris.
Yeah, so they have to kill him, really, in order to sort of carry on. And I think that's wonderful. What I'm saying is that it's just based in some interesting stuff that readers and listeners might like. So
it's very rich. It's very rich stuff, and I think...
It is rich.
One of the reasons it works so nicely is because it's the whole world has been created in some detail, and I don't know who's responsible for that, whether it's Eric Sawad or Christopher Bailey.
It's certainly the work of Christopher Bailey.
There's a lot of thought that's gone into it, especially I like the idea of a whole tribe of men that don't speak.
And you have one woman
that doesn't speak.
I'm sure some of our listeners would like that.
it's very clever. And then when he does speak, it's absolute horror within that society.
But that's all in James Fraser, because lot of societies were matriarchal, because, you know, we tend to think of the man traditionally as being the most important person in a family, and that's what we've got in this country, sort of going back centuries, a patriarchal society. But in most tribes, it was matriarchal, because men could come and go, be killed, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But if you don't have women to give birth and keep the... And so things were... I was reading about this in Fraser. Women were the... you know, like how we take our dad's name as our surname. It was the opposite in a lot of tribal societies. It was the woman who you'd be known for. You'd be so-and-so's daughter or so-and-so's son. It'd be the mother that you would reference, and her, she would be. And that comes out in this. The men are kind of insignificant, really, which is quite like that, because it sort of, you know, brings us down a peg or two, because we think we've got it right. And that's the whole point of this, is to say, look, there's other ways of doing it, I think.
And that's reflected, of course, with the colonists because the doctor...
Colin Baker.
The colonists.
Well, he's like, they're a patriarchal society.
They are, but the doctor, Meredith Hughes, Dr. Hughes, she is actually the most sensible one in the team.
She's ignored. Yeah. Sensible trousers.
Yes, she's the brains, and she's the only one who comes out, actually, unchanged by the whole process because she didn't need changing in the first place.
She's a good actor.
And I thought she was a very good performance, actually.
I like him very much in it. Yeah. But all this follows an interesting topic of conversation because... the story Kinder follows Fort Doomsday, which is devoid of these sorts of ideas, isn't it? It doesn't have a point of view about life. It doesn't have a philosophical bent or anything like that. This really, Kinder is the beginning of the Peter Davison era proper. So we don't have a big larger-than-life character actor in the lead role.
But we're going to explore interesting ideas.
Exactly.
Sometimes the ideas take over and sometimes the dialogue becomes wooden and the acting becomes wooden. And you're fighting against so much in that era. Bad actors, bad companions, bad sets, blah, blah, blah. We talk about this ad infinitum. But I think, when you've got a good idea and someone who can write dialogue... You get away with it, don't you? And you know, some really damn good actors as well.
Yeah.
Eric Saywood came on as script editor for Kinder, but it was Anthony Root who did Fort Doomsday. Mm-hmm. I think he was only filling in the gap. So that may be a reason for that, I don't know. But maybe Fort Doomsday wouldn't have happened if Eric Saywood was
in. But this is children's television we're talking about here, and we have a character in it, Hindle, brilliantly played by Simon Rouse. I have to say, one of the best performances in Doctor Who. Who has a nervous breakdown on the screen. He has this complete breakdown. And that's quite powerful.
I mean, the last time we saw that was in Fawlty Towers when John Cleese hit a car with a branch.
Yeah. I mean, there are, Reggie Perrin is clearly having a midlife crisis.
It's not kids' TV, isn't it?
But no, it's not kids' TV. It's comedy, but it's not kids' TV. Very dark ideas about a man who is suicidal and having a breakdown and all the rest of it.
But it's done seriously for a change, because it has been done in Doctor Who before. It's done with mad scientists.
Yes.
But it's a very different one. This is the first time. Inferno. But this is the first time.
It really feels proper. It does feel like.
And you feel sorry for him.
You never feel sorry for him, though. Yeah. Because Hindle, in parts, is a nasty piece of work, but you never lose that sympathy. And I think a lot of that is down to the performance and the very good dialogue and the fact that the humanity shows through both in the script and in the performance. So Simon Rouse finds the humanity of this character.
And there's a bravery, I suppose, in just saying, look, we're going to do this properly. Mm-hmm. We're not going to take the piss. We're playing it completely straight. You've got Richard Todd. You've got Rousey, old Rousemeister. Yeah. Let's do it properly.
I'm astonished, actually, I've seen Simon Rouse a couple of times on stage. Mm-hmm. A very reputable actor. He did the bill he's made a lot of money and he's been extremely successful. But I'm surprised that he never, given the amazing performance he gave in Doctor Who, that in the early 80s he didn't become a sort of a bigger thing on television.
Yeah, I wonder why. I don't know.
It's very surprising to me.
I spoke to him after I saw him in a show called The Full Monty.
You saw his dingling.
I saw him
you
naked.
You went to see his dingling, Sam.
I saw him naked at Leeds Grand Theatre in The Full Monty in a dancing routine at the end.
You see The Full Monty.
And I said, God, you're naked on stage,
Is he humped?
If you were just allowed me to finish one sentence.
And I said, what is the name of that routine when you're naked at the end? He said, I just call it my snake dance.
Yes, well, it may be surprised.
I did speak to him, and I said I thought it was a fantastic performance she gave in Doctor Who. I was always a bit embarrassed to ask these questions. He said, this is a little thing he's done, and he's done an awful lot since.
Yeah,
but he said he was very proud of it.
I think he ought to be, because it's not just a sort of a guest star of the week. It's not Ken Don, is he? So
he was very proud of it, but he said he wanted to play it with a regional accent, and they wouldn't let him.
I can see that. I can see why. It wouldn't work.
But it's a colonial thing, isn't it?
No, because he's playing the cut-glass English sort of,
he's playing Kenneth Moore.
Rudyard Kipling.
I think as a young man in the early 80s, he wanted to do something with grit.
It wouldn't have worked with Where's Me Mangle?
It would have worked against the.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But he's getting a lot of fan mail about it.
Well, yeah, and so he ought. I think the clash of cultures and the fact that I love the bit where the Doctor's being called the idiot.
In the cave.
Yeah, come on, idiot. You know, that's lovely.
Well, Mary Morris, we've not talked about her.
She's wonderful, yes.
She is, very good.
You believe entirely that she's a sort of prehistoric woman, don't you?
How old was she then?
About 1,000.
She puts me in mind very much of
Beatrix Lehmann. They sort of come from the same plot.
They were actually Beatrix Lehmann and Mary Morris.
War faces.
Lesbians. extremely beautiful in that young year. You wouldn't know it to look at the...
But when the Blitz happened, it all those lines. Yes.
Cigarettes and alcohol.
But Mary Morris played the number two in the...
likes clam.
In The Prisoner, in Dance of the Dead.
Dance of the Dead.
Yes, she's in The Prisoner.
I love that moment when she goes into the trance and takes them with her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They go into this really weird 1980s video effect with all of these carriage clocks, and there's like a digital clock that you'd see in the student's flat.
It's all very Salvador Dali.
It is, but it's rather strange. But then I was like, actually, they're just seeing it through the eyes of things they recognise, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's all meta and everything else.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I thought, that's silly. They've got clocks which they wouldn't have on Kinder. Now I know better.
You know better.
Oh, it's symbolic. As a child. As a child.
It's a great cliffhanger.
One of the things that I really love about this is the cliffhangers. They're very, very good.
Yes.
They're very, very, very good. Very good. I can't recall any of them at the moment. I remember thinking that. Yes.
As she dies in one cliffhanger, they find her body upright.
Dead. Oh, yes.
Maurice.
And there's the box that opens and the jacket pops out. And what's the third cliffhanger?
Do you remember? I can't remember.
It's the end of time, isn't it?
Oh, have you shocked! Is it that bit?
Yeah. No, it is. It's Hindle. And it's a zoom up on Peter Davidson's face looking slightly scared.
This annoys me. It's something John Nathan Turner used to do. It should have been his cliffhanger. It should have been a still on Hindle. But they always... John Nathan says, I want it to be the Doctor that people see at the end. And he was always doing that. Always cutting back to the Doctor.
Colin Baker's
pork chop.
Looming face. They have to build a massive camera.
Well, the wide-angle lens was invented
purely
to get Colin Baker's face on television.
You know, we used to be on board with Colin and have some sympathy, but ever since.
ever since Brexit.
It's both barrels.
I'm not only from another culture, but another planet. I am, in your terms, an alien.
Colin, we've got no mercy.
Yes.
It's your fault. And Boris.
How many TARDISes would you give Kinder out of 5?
Ooh. I give it four. Because
there's still the Peter Davis era, so it's still not great.
The final episode is a
runaround.
It doesn't quite live up, does it? And you've got that ridiculous pink snake at the end.
Yeah,
which I mean, even doing a CSO montage of a real snake would have been better than constructing a bright pink silly snake with flappy teeth.
And the director did the best he could with it, but it was just...
I think the camera lingered on it far too much.
They obviously didn't have enough shots of it.
But it must have cost a few quid to build.
Yeah. It just looks so terrible.
Waste of money.
I'm sure if the writer had been told, we can't afford that effect, do something else, I'm sure he could have come up with something a bit more effective. But it does let it down. And I do think that there could have been a little bit more explanation to the kids, not in a sort of heavy-handed way, of what is really going on.
Could they have done apparently the original Merc, it was even worse, and John Nathan Turner said, that's not acceptable, that can't be on screen. How did that pink snake get on screen? I mean, it's not good.
I suppose it's a fabrication of the imagination, so it doesn't matter if it looks shit.
It does.
I thought the mirror thing was quite cool because they'd seeded that earlier with the Kinder, so you could kind of see the link.
What would you give it, Andrew?
Definitely a 4. I really like it.
We all agree.
I think it's really complex stuff for a kids' TV show, and I don't think it gets much more complex than that until Ghostlight again. Really.
Yes, Ghostlight.
Moving on to Snake Dance, I wouldn't say that's complex, I say that's a mess. Does somebody want to talk about that? Because I don't think I can.
I watched it on the Horror Channel several months ago, out of sequence. I think I watched it all the way through over various different times because I recorded it. And then I had the DVD that Matthew Bell very kindly lended me, and I just didn't get round to watching it, so I haven't seen it recently.
Greg? I'll just read this.
Have you seen it recently?
I watched Kinder, I watched Full Sail. I'm just like, I ran out of time and energy and
enthusiasm.
The will to live to watch Snake Dance.
Read it out from John Mark.
So, in Snake Dance, what we have is Doctor Who is not in control of the TARDIS. Tegan takes control of TARDIS. She sends it to the planet Manusa.
So, okay, right, so we know this happens, and we know that it's good. It's a good idea, isn't it, to get Tegan back in that... Because she was good as when she was doing evil, wasn't she?
I think the thinking behind it was it's this 20th anniversary season where everything comes back, and the highlight from the last one was Kinder.
So. Don't repeat
the eggs.
Well, this is maybe my trump card, but it's basically Kinder and then Snake Dance is the equivalent of Curse of Peladon and then Monster of Peladon, in my view.
Yes.
It's like you go from an original that's actually really good and a really good idea to another one that's a bit of a rehash of ideas we've already heard, but done in a very boring
But it starts well. It's got Nissa Natalis, she's asleep, she's having a nightmare, and we've got those lovely kind of like weird dreamlike sequences.
Yes.
And the Doctor is instantly aware, and I like this part, that something isn't right when everyone else is playing it down.
Playing it cool.
And he's like, no, this is serious, it's not just a nightmare.
It's television, it's Peter Davison.
They rig a little device, like an iPod.
Yeah, it does rather.
That she listens to. And she's listening to Jackson 5, whatever.
Maroon 5.
That's the trendy thing these days.
And they land on... What planet is it, Greg?
Minusa?
Something to do with the Sumaran era, which is something to do with the origins of the Mara, I believe. Yeah.
Right.
And Martin Clunes is on a chaise longue.
Yes, and that just immediately makes you laugh. Cause it's just so, I mean, it's hardly original to suggest that Martin Clunes looks like a fucking tit.
So it gets worse.
He just looks awful.
Did you know that he was the nephew of Jeremy Brett?
Yes.
I did know that. Yes, because you told us.
Now so
have
yours.
Jeremy Brett is one of the greatest, other than Bob Peck, probably the greatest actor to ever live.
Actor's family he was born into.
Ham-faced idiot Martin Clunes.
Big-eared loon.
Jog-eared twat Martin Clunes.
He looks like Michael Gove.
He does. Rubber-lipped fool Martin Clunes.
Something that's really struck me when I was watching his performance in this is that he speaks throughout. It's his posh voice. It's his prince-like voice. He sounds like Don Warrington all the way through from Rising Down.
I think it's just another example of the way so-called civilized countries are decimating the animal kingdom and just to satisfy the whims of fashion to grace the idle pampered shoulders of Western women.
He's playing royalty in this, isn't he? So he's in this. He's kind of a prince of some sort, isn't he?
But he's a spoiled prince.
He's sort of a bit of a Caligula type, isn't
Prince
he?
Prince Edward.
There's no threat to it, though.
He just comes across as a tosser. He is a tosser, isn't he? Yeah. So Out of Bread is in it. Jonathan Morris.
Yes, Jonathan Porritt. He's really
not Johnny Morris, who used to do that thing with animals, but Jonathan Morris.
What happened to Jonathan Morris? He just disappeared up.
He was in Bread.
I think he disappeared up his own arsehole, if you listen to the commentary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he thought he was above being in Doctor Who.
Oh.
No one's above being
And then he went on to Bread.
And then he went on to Carla Lane's Bread. He's no Peter Howell, is he? Or Peter Howitt.
He directed
The Sliding Door.
That's it.
Okay, so the mirrors return. There's mirrors and stuff going on.
Mirrors and shit.
I think that the Hall of Mirrors comes after Tegan is fully possessed by the Mara once again.
What are they doing, Clunes and his mates? They want to look at these remains or ruins, don't they?
I think isn't there a ceremony coming out where they run the
John Carson.
Yeah.
Very good actor.
I like the bit where they go to John Carson's funny land.
Yes.
The cardboard set.
Yes, that's very silly.
It's shot and filmed for no reason.
Oh, not him. No, the old man. Preston Lockwood.
That's good. Is it Preston Lockwood?
That's the name of the actor who plays the really old guy with the snake.
It just becomes something else then.
A bit more interesting.
And I think that's when you're watching on the horror channel. I was thinking, blimey, this is good.
But then it goes back to the studio, and Martin Clunes teaches us that those bits are shot on exactly the same set as the bits that are shot on tape.
Yeah.
They really are, but on 16mm they look really good. But when they're shot on video, they look shit.
Yes, they do.
Filmers. It makes everything massive difference. The lighting.
Quantel in there?
They did use Quantel for the bit where Nina. I keep saying Nina.
Who's Nina?
Fuck knows. Where Tegan is going up the steps in the dream sequence, as far as I know, Quantel is used in that. But Brian Miller crops up as Dugdale. He's the best thing in it, I think.
He was married to Elizabeth Sladen.
At that time, he was.
He was indeed.
And he did Dalek voices that season or the season after, wasn't he?
He was in Resurrection of the Daleks. What's the guy who plays the Doctor Who now? Not the proper Doctor Who, but the remake. What's the one who's currently played? The Scotchack.
Capaldi.
He was in Capaldi's first episode.
He was.
As what?
Yes,
he played some old tramp.
Old tramp, yeah.
So what we're essentially saying, I think we need to make an admission to the listeners that we really focused on Kinder. We've got the story down pat. We've had a good explanation of what's going on with it. We've talked about the actors. We've had a good review. It's all gone to points, Nate, for us. We really have.
Because we don't care about it. We just don't care.
There's a good reason. Meandering around like a bunch of useless tossers, which I suppose is what they were doing against Nate.
Something I did notice, it's just, and this is with the Doctor for most of this, chasing Tegan around. Nyssa still has no function in this story, even though it's her and the Doctor.
And there's one of those...
Nothing to do.
I remember very distinctly, there's one of those sort of markets that you get in Doctor Who. Where's she gone? Oh, I saw her over there. It's like, oh, for God's sake, do we have to enjoy
it's
this
the underwater
rubbish?
Menace all over
again.
Yes.
It's all in one set, so it's like, oh, no, I'm over here, then, oh, I've travelled so far to come over there.
Six yards away.
There's something else going on that's supposed to
I'm
be...
I'm sorry, we can't say yards
it's,
now.
It's directed by Fiona Cumming, isn't it? Who's, you know, quite an effective director, generally.
I mean, she's okay.
She's not a shocker.
She's not a shocker, I know.
That's a relief.
Maybe bring up the positives. I have to say, like in Kinder, Janet Fielding puts in a very good performance. I think she's very, very good in Snake Dance. And I think they're probably...
Sorry, I'm just stroking.
Tom is caressing a packet of espresso. He's in with the Italians here. He's supporting Italians in Euro 96, yes. Which is currently happening as we speak, isn't it? Euro 96
we didn't
is still
mention that. They didn't.
I thought we were leaving the Eurovision Song.
No, this is the football competition. Euro 96 was the first one, and then every few years they think, let's do it again, but it's somewhere else.
Yeah.
And this year it's in France.
Do you know?
Euro 96.
I didn't know what I was voting for in the Eurovision Song Contest, so I googled it afterwards and I found out it was a TV show, so it's alright. Good job it wasn't serious.
Cliff Richard, yes.
Oh, he's free. He's out of it, Mark.
Hey!
The way he was treated is disgraceful and disgusting. And I'm no Cliff Richard fan, but the way he has been treated is appalling.
By the West Yorkshire Police?
He knows to come to go on a summer holiday to get out of his system. We've rounded off the point because I'm running out of energy on this. Can we kind of wind it up?
I like John Carson's performance in Snake Dance.
I'll caress my coffee while he's
most of the rest of it, I couldn't care less.
I have real problems with Snake Dance, and the problems are this. I think they commissioned it thinking we can bottle the magic we got in the first one. They were very lazy with it, and they didn't even question the fundamental elements of story. So it's dull. And it has the same ideas as the first one, but they just don't fly because you don't really understand what's going on nor care about the characters. It's one of the worst Doctor Who's, I think, from the Davison era. I wouldn't even give it... I think you can give it one TARDIS because you can't give half a TARDIS.
I wouldn't give it even the time of day.
No? You wouldn't even give it a TARDIS?
No.
I give it two TARDIS.
Two? Two, because it's not dreadful. It's got those bits on film.
It's better than
with
Time
the funny
Flight.
Land.
But at least Time Flight's funny. No. You can laugh at it, you know. The Snake Dance isn't even funny, and it doesn't make any sense.
And it's got the vestiges of all the ideas, the Freud, the James Fraser stuff, that you can't deny is interesting. So if you'd never seen Kinder, you might be, oh, that's interesting.
Oh, I see.
So Christopher Bailey, whatever happened to him?
This was his last script for television, as far as I know.
What happened to him?
I think he submitted a third script to the production office, and it was so bad.
He died, penniless and alone.
I think he returned to theatre.
No, he's still alive.
Oh, good.
That's the stuff for stage.
He's happy. He's obviously an intelligent man.
Very
intelligent. But Kinder was great, Snake Dance not so much. Yeah, there we go. Well,
there we go. Kinder surprise
is that it's no surprise because everyone knows that Kinder's good.
It's lightning doesn't strike twice
in the same bottle.
You can't bottle lightning in the same place twice. Is that right?
That's the one.
Yep. So I think that's what we've learnt, viewers, listeners. Do you like Snake Dance? If so, why?
So
what's wrong with you? It's okay, it's fine. You know, you're entitled to your opinion. If we don't like something and you like something, you're entitled to think that. You're entitled to say that you disagree with
it. It's all very well. I respect your opinion.
Yes.
It's Rob Sherman's favourite Doctor Who, and he writes for the new series, yeah.
Is he Rob Sherman? Is he the one with the beard?
Big, like, teddy bear, like, looks like DLT.
Oh, dear.
It's his favourite Doctor Who, thinks it's outstanding.
Snake
down. So maybe I've missed something.
Well, it was fun, that. Yes, nice.
That's actually a record for us. It's our lowest rated Doctor Who, the Time Space Visualizer.
Oh, and we've barely talked about Peter Davidson.
But we've touched on Peter.
Yeah.
And we've touched him.
We've touched him, yeah.
So, wrapping this up, it's Guess the Line. Anybody got any ideas? Do you want to hear it again?
Let's hear it again.
Let's hear it again.
Play it again, sir. You deserve a medal for self-sacrifice beyond the bounds of stupidity.
It's actually just play it, Sam. You know, if you watch Casablanca, he says play it, Sam.
He does.
Miss debunked with Greg Jameson.
You deserve a medal for self-sacrifice beyond the bounds of stupidity.
I know it, I've got it.
He's got it.
By Jove, he's got it!
Okay.
Revenge of the Cybermen.
Yep.
Who is it? It's the blonde boy saying it. I can't remember the character's name or the actor's name. He's still alive. He did the voice in Thunderbirds.
For Virgil.
No, not Professor Kellerman. Kellerman? Kellerford? Kelman!
Yay! Well done, Greg. Got it.
It was lingering there somewhere in the recesses of my brain.
You're
on fire, Greg. You're on fire today.
Shit, were.
Yeah.
So I know that at some point soon in the series, we're going to talk about religion. And so I think this is because we could have talked a lot about religion in this episode, but we chose not to because that's coming up a whole damn episode of a crazy show.
I'm worried about the religion episode.
We talk about since the politics so episode, much. We alienated at least half our listeners and annoyed the other half. So. So we're really, it's going to be good. It's going to be a real bum cracker.
Because my own...
That isn't a phrase.
It's going to be a humdinger.
And a bum cracker.
My own point of view is you can't
bottle religion, can you?
It's difficult to define what religion is apart from it's crazy beliefs or beliefs without evidence.
You're straying into the abyss.
Yeah.
By pontificating too soon.
I think religion and also in politics are very finely intertwined because we've been quite political recently about politics. So, and I see a lot of religion in politics and vice versa.
Yeah. Bound to get people's backs up. Twitter will go ablaze with it.
I don't think JNT liked religion very much.
All politics.
No. I don't think, but
I don't think he understood the writing, so he used to slip past it.
It was just a very sort of trendy of science writers to sort of science.
We've got that to look forward to.
We have.
We've launched Tom Baker. We talked about Tom Baker in the Hinchcliffe era, and we described it as the best Doctor Who ever. Then we talked about Tom Baker with the Graham Williams era. We decided it wasn't quite as good, apart from Graham Crowden.
Will things improve?
But what we haven't done yet is talked about Tom Baker's final season as Doctor.
Yes, and that will be our finale.
Coming up, we're talking to Richard Willis, who you will know, who played Varsh, Adric's brother in Full Circle.
Who has the most amazing death scream.
Adric!
Very good.
And we may well find out that death scream stroke scene never even happened. You know, he had to
nearly never happened. Yeah. So we'll get to that. But
all that and more
coming up in the next part of the series in Doctor Who:
The Complete Menagerie. Almost.
If you would just allow me to finish one sentence, you might learn something.
If you enjoyed listening to that twaddle, you can follow us on Twitter at DW Menagerie. That's at DW Menagerie, and we'll be tweeting various photographs of our inside leg measurements and that sort of thing.
Doctor Who is copyright of the BBC. No infringements on copyright are intended. Support Doctor Who by purchasing DVDs and CDs and all other media from the BBC. Any comments made by the Complete Menagerie, almost, are all our own.
You've been listening to a Sixth Floor production.